looking around for sure the bus made it. And some... How did you all get here from St. Louis? Cars? Yeah. Cars? Then you rented. Okay. And others just now coming. Nice to be here, huh? Wait till the hours and the mornings and the afternoons and the evenings wear on. For those of you that haven't been here before for these kinds of events, I've come to appreciate this word magic. Gita Nagari has some magic here. And I expect Gita Nagari magic to happen with a number of the devotees who have come. The topic that we'll be discussing or focusing on, a very nice topic for this weekend, the topic of loving relationships. In the spiritual world, where we're all trying to gradually work our way towards, in the spiritual world, the fullness of loving relationships exists. And we're going to be hearing, and through workshops also sharing, some of the things that make up loving relationships, some of the obstacles that block us experiencing loving relationships, and so on. I'm looking forward to participating and also observing the transformations of numbers of devotees here. So the topic that I selected for this evening is something along the lines of how do you begin a loving relationship? And you begin a loving relationship as the same way that bhakti begins. This is one of our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, asks the question, how does bhakti begin? Bhakti means service, and it's a relationship of loving service between the devotee and his devotee's master, Krishna. So how does bhakti begin? And if we can understand how bhakti begins, then we can extend that to say this is how loving relationships can begin. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explores some possibilities of how bhakti begins and then rejects them with the main understanding that as Krishna is independent, so also bhakti is independent, being the internal or an expansion of the internal potency of Krishna. So bhakti is fully independent as Krishna is. So you can't find some material cause how bhakti begins. But bhakti begins rather when a devotee who's carrying bhakti exhibits a quality of a Vaishnava, compassion, and they give bhakti. And then you can receive bhakti. And you can, if you cultivate it carefully, it can grow. That's how bhakti begins. You receive from a bhakta. And our whole Vedic process is a descending one. Descending, as opposed to ascending. So many things in this world that are a reflection of the spiritual world, they're ascending. Now think of the education system where you learn your alphabet, and then you learn how to spell, and then you learn how to make sentences, and then you just, you know, becomes more and more, one thing builds upon the next thing and becomes then so-called complete. Or arithmetic, and then multiplication, and then algebra and trigonometry and calculus, and more and more complex, based upon something simple, and so on. Ascending process is very much what material knowledge or material acquisition is based upon. You have $1 and then you invest and you get $2 and so on. It's an ascending thing. But spiritual knowledge is descending from the very beginning. It's descending, and today it's descending, and forever into the future will be descending. Receiving transcendental knowledge is a descending thing, and it requires both a transmitter and a receiver, using our Western language, or someone. The first canto of the Bhagavatam, in particular, if you take notice of the themes that are woven in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, this is a theme, again and again and again and again, multiple times. The qualifications of a speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, or one who is transmitter of spiritual knowledge, and the qualification of one who is a receiver. And you can't take up the business of transmitting spiritual knowledge if you haven't received it. You can't give something you don't have. So I thought to spend a little bit of time on the same thing that Vyasadeva selected to focus upon, where Narada Muni, in the early chapters of the first canto, is taken as an example or a role model or a personality who we can study how he received Krishna through a very nice relationship. Although he was unqualified and not sophisticated and not highly educated and practically a nobody from a material point of view, but certain series of things happened, and through a very important relationship, he achieved spiritual perfection. And as a result of that spiritual perfection, he was able to then in turn become a transmitter of loving relationships. But first, he received it. So just go through the narration briefly that Vyasadeva provides for us in the first canto, or Suta Goswami speaks in the first canto. And the topic here is receiving a loving relationship. And I'll probably could just take it for granted, but I'll say it rather than just take it for granted, that for there to be a genuine loving relationship in this world, God has to be in the center of it. The converse. If God is not in the center of a relationship, it's not a loving relationship. There's a relationship, but it's some other kind of relationship than what a loving relationship is. The kind of loving relationship that exists in the spiritual world is what real loving relationships are. So to have true loving relationships with others, there must be a loving relationship with God. Many of you have been in audiences when I've made this presentation about currency of relationships, that's describing what a pure and impure relationship is and what the nature of a relationship is. And there are certain essential ingredients that must be there for a loving relationship. And that is, you understand who the other person is. And if you don't understand who the other person is, if there's a fundamental misunderstanding of who the other person is, then it's a disturbed relationship or a dysfunctional relationship or something other than a loving relationship. Although intent may be nice, it's misplaced. And it ends up disturbing to both parties. So that's an assumption that I'm just going to keep moving from that point. Narada is using his own example to describe to his disciple Vyasadeva, who doesn't need any education. He's an incarnation of God, but he's taking the role of somebody like us that somehow didn't get it. You know, we had good intentions, we did lots of good things, but somehow we didn't get it. So he's taking a role like that, and Narada's instructing him. He's instructing him by using his own example. And he describes, there's some qualifications. First is good fortune. Trying to think of the Sanskrit phrase that says, somehow or other, one becomes fortunate. One becomes fortunate by receiving the fortune of a compassionate person. Huh? Batteries? Okay. I'll read what Narada says. He's speaking to Vyasadeva. O Muni, in the last millennium, I was born as the son of a certain maidservant engaged in the service of Brahmanas who are following the principles of Vedanta. When they were living together during the 4 months of the rainy season, I was engaged in their personal service. So, service. Relationship, some kind of service, because that's who we are. We're constitutionally servants. And that's what servants do, they serve. So he was serving them. In an appropriate manner, he was young, they were elderly, they were brahmanas on pilgrimage, and he was just taking care of their basic needs, that kind of service. But service of whatever the various kinds of service in relationship. Although they were impartial by nature, those followers of Vedanta blessed me with their causeless mercy. So what was the cause? There wasn't one. Causeless. They were just merciful. And that's an essential part of receiving a loving relationship. There's someone that has the capacity and they share it. And then there's the capacity to receive it. So what are some of the points that Narada identified that and allowed him or assisted him to receive what these sages were offering and giving. I was self-controlled, and I had no attachment for sports, even though I was a small boy. In addition, I was not naughty, nor did I speak more than required. So, although Narada is speaking about a time when he was just small, just a child, the basic points that are mentioned, which Prabhupada repeats in the purport, self-controlled. He highlights in the purport, self-controlled. So when you wish to not do something, you don't do something. When you wish to do something, you're able to do that something. There's some, it's not just working on impulse, but there's some control of the mind and senses. If there isn't control of the mind and senses, there's not really an opportunity to receive. It's one is just kind of all over the place. So the conditioned souls in Kali Yuga are quite often like that, all over the place. So it makes it difficult to actually enter into a loving relationship. So some part of qualifying oneself for a loving relationship, any relationship, is some kind of self-control. And for that self-control to become enhanced, the next point that Prabhupada speaks about is discipline. Discipline not in the sense of someone coming after you with a stick, not that kind of discipline, but the sense of discipline where there's some indication and one is happy to yield to that indication. Now, I'm going with the premise, the assumption, that there has to be some connection with Krishna in order for there to be lateral relationships. You know, loving relationships. There has to be some openness to our relationship with Krishna. And here is describing, Narada is describing, how he received through these qualified persons his relationship with Krishna, because he didn't have that. He didn't have any conscious awareness of it, at least. So through their kindness and his receptivity, he got an awakened state of his real identity and Krishna's identity, and then in turn able to enter into relationships with other persons. So discipline. Prabhupada writes that in this purport that it's discipline is necessary for one to make progress. Specifically, he's referring to on the path of spiritual life. But in the path of entering into a loving relationship with Krishna, which is the prerequisite to a loving relationship with others. I'll speak more about this in tomorrow morning's class. But if our hearts are infested with selfishness, any relationship that we enter into with others is a selfish relationship. And that's not what a loving relationship is. So this sense of discipline is essential. Voluntarily yielding to some higher principle or higher teaching or higher understanding because of some regard or respect for that person was offering this guidance. And a third point that Prabhupada speaks about is obedient. A nice example of this is from Nectar of Devotion, where Rupa Goswami is describing the disposition of Krishna's son, Pradyumna. So Pradyumna, he's also one of the Chaturvyuha. He's Vasudev, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. He's a manifestation of the Lord. But he's taking the position of Krishna's son. And he's showing by example what is the relationship of a son to his father, or what's the mood of service, dasya, or here, obedience. The example of Pradyumna that's described is if Krishna wanted something and Pradyumna didn't want that something, Pradyumna would do that something because his father wanted that something. And then just the opposite. If Krishna didn't want something, but he had an idea that he wanted that something, he would drop that idea of that something because Krishna didn't want it. Just because Krishna didn't want it. Just like that. That's this obedience in a loving relationship. Obedience in a loving relationship. Specifically here, these aren't as yet, at least, these individuals, these sadhus, aren't his spiritual master. They're just, you know, very qualified persons. They're Vedantists who he's serving. And because of his regard for them, if they give some indication, he does it. And if they give some indication not something, he doesn't do that something. Just like that. These are qualifications for receiving a loving relationship. Ultimately, a loving relationship with Krishna. And once again, when that loving relationship with Krishna becomes renewed, revived, and reestablished, then loving relationships with all types of persons can awaken, become possible. Narada goes on, only once, by their permission, I took the remnants of their food, and by so doing, all my sins were at once eradicated. He had some faith in the persons and had faith in the prasad of those persons, and he experienced the cleansing effect of that exchange with them. That is to say, there was some basis of his faith based on practical experience in interacting with them. He felt elevated in their association. I became purified at heart. And at that time, the very nature of the transcendentalists became attractive to me. Just a little boy, but he was appreciating their qualities. So as he's going on doing the service and appreciating their qualities, he's hearing their conversations because he's bringing their meals and doing little menial services. He's hearing with great attention. Thus, listening attentively, my taste for hearing increased at every step. And what's he hearing about? The personality of Godhead. Because that's the center of a loving relationship. So the bond of affection for those personalities became much stronger, and the subject matter that they were speaking about also became an object of great attention. Krishna. O great sage, as soon as I got a taste of the personality of Godhead, my attention to hear of the Lord became unflinching. So he's moving very swiftly. We may not move so swiftly. But gradually, it's the measure, one of the measures of a loving relationship is that because Krishna is the object that's being shared, the attraction for the object will grow. And it will grow in proportion to or as a measure of one's respect and trust and confidence in the persons who are offering this message of Krishna and their loving relationship. He also said, as his taste developed, I could realize that it was only in my ignorance that I had accepted gross and subtle coverings, for both the Lord and I are transcendental. So note that it's the sequence. His faith preceded the realization of his own transcendental nature. The attraction for the persons led to attraction to the topics of the persons, led to purification, led to realization of his transcendental nature. In other words, he was able to become situated in a realized way about his true transcendental nature and thus be able to relate to those great souls on a spiritual platform and relate to the subject of those great souls on a spiritual platform because of the loving relationship that had been nurtured between him and those wonderful personalities. And as they saw, it's natural, as they saw the small boy was becoming so attracted and wasn't unnecessarily talkative and was self-controlled and so on, they went out of their way to instruct him further besides their own conversations and allowing him to hear and take remnants of prasad. It became a very confidential and intimate relationship. Although he was very small and, again, obscure personality, they initiated him into chanting and a process of fixing his consciousness upon the Supreme. Because they could recognize this is a very wonderful soul and the relationship is a very wonderful relationship. So they instructed him or they shared with him even more confidentially. And he is receiving and receiving and receiving and receiving. So fast forward over time, and Narada is now taking birth in the next day of Brahma. And because he has received this wonderful gift from these sages, and he's, according to their advice, he's cultivated it. And according to the advice of the Lord, he maintained that practice throughout his entire life, although knowing he would never see the Lord again. He continued very faithfully. And in his next life became Narada Muni. And now as Narada Muni, he's performing the same service, giving that same opportunity to so many others. And very compassionately and very expertly and incessantly. We don't find Narada doing other things. He's always engaged in that way. And then as he in turn imparts that same gift to others, they in turn impart that same gift to others. And he comes back, and like with Magari, after very expertly and very compassionately transforming Magari into a Vaishnav, he came back again. See how my devotee Magari is doing. And he brought one of his friends, Parvat Muni, with him, so he could get some more association. Or Valmiki, how, you know, he was a dacoit. But Narada was so expert, he transformed a dacoit into a Valmiki. And in each case, the compassionate transmitter, Narada, was very careful in studying the qualifications of the candidate, the recipient, and according to the qualifications of the recipient, he extended his compassion. Now there were some, at least we'll mention one, Daksha, didn't get it. Because he didn't have he was unable to receive the loving relationship that Narada was extending because his heart was too much filled with pride. So why is it that, we'll explore a little bit, this is on the topic of receiving. In entering into a loving relationship, receiving that love that a loving personality might be extending to us, why might we not receive it? This, we had a little flip chart. We can make a long list of things. Why people don't receive. Some cases people just, they don't trust. Because back there somewhere, they were cheated. Cheated badly many times. So they don't want anything that looks like a close relationship, what to speak of, a loving relationship. Although everybody wants one, everybody wants to love and be loved. Universally, the heart becomes blocked because there was some bad experience. Or they never had the experience of a loving relationship, so when they see one, they don't know what it is. And when they recognize it's not just pretense or not, you know, something else, they don't know how to respond to it. Because they've never had any experience how to respond to it. Don't know what to do. So they go the other way or do something strange. Because they don't know what to do. So fear or doubt or uncertainty or staying stuck in some bad experience or just stuck in the mind and not being able to open the heart. So one of the first steps of experiencing loving relationships is being able to receive them. And to receive them, these nice qualities that Narada describes about himself, which is so that we can understand how to receive loving relationships from persons who are qualified to extend them, will help us a lot. Just very succinctly to repeat them: self-controlled, disciplined, obedient, and some sense of recognizing when there is this exchange with a devotee who's a loving devotee, not just what it is that they're extending, but the genuine care and concern that's behind that which is being extended. Premarnava just walked in. Premarnava? Yeah. I'm going to share about Manu, is that all right?
Sure,
okay. Because Premarnava and his family live in central New Jersey, it's very nice. It's nice for me and I hope it's nice for your family that I can, you know, stay at their home and go to programs and come back and have a nice, you know, devotee atmosphere to take rest. So he has a small boy, Manu. And Manu has this thing, he won't say Hari Bol, or he won't say Hare Krishna. He just... But every time when I come, I bring Mahaprasad from Radha Govinda temple. So when he sees me, he looks at his mother or father and says, Burfi! But he won't say it. Then Shaivya, you know, come on, Manu, say it. But it's at some point he'll get the words out. You know, he says thank you. He looks at the thank you. I'm sure that there's some feeling of appreciation besides he likes Burfi. But a loving relationship goes beyond just the gift that's given. Although recognizing the gift that's given is important. As, let's say, parents to their children. We have some children, devotee children here. Your parents are making so many arrangements, so many sacrifices, so much is in their life is dedicating to take care of you as children. And, you know, for years and years and years, and there's not a day that they don't do that. So recognize what that sacrifice is. And when there's some recognition, then some feelings of gratitude, because it's not just the thing, but it's the commitment and care and concern and sacrifice and love that's being extended. Then it can be a loving relationship, not just, you know, mom and dad are taking care of things and I just live here. It becomes, the relationship deepens. It's the sign of a maturity of a child in the family or in school or in this association of devotees or the adults to recognize there are many, many persons, just like, you know, for us to come here to Gita Nagari, there are a lot of devotees that made, you know, what to speak of, just the temple itself, but even the arrangements for cleaning of the rooms and arranging of the bathrooms, so there's enough sinks and toilets for all the influx of extra devotees here, and fixing up this and cleaning that and so they want us to have a nice experience. We're happy they want us to have a nice experience. And the expression of gratitude for those that are making this sacrifice. It's an important part of loving exchange. It's the mercy of Radha Damodar, and we're all just getting some of that mercy, but in different forms. I'll just share the same type of thing from another context. We just had a North American temple president and GBC meeting in New Vrindavan that went for 6 days. At least for the GBC, it spanned for 6 days. And Malati Mataji was there, and she had her main assistant, Damodar Priya, and then there were two other persons. And everything went so smoothly. And there was this flood of appreciation. I mean, like I've never seen it before, because it was very, very meaningful. And everyone felt so grateful for those that were assisting us. And those that were assisting us weren't doing it so they could get some gratitude and appreciation. But when they received again and again and again very, very genuine expressions of gratitude and appreciation, it made the relationship that had been going on, the relationship of service, so nice. Like, they, I'm, you know, something like, I can't wait till they come back again. and give us the opportunity to serve them. We use those kinds of expressions, but it requires going a little more deeply into this thing of receiving what it is that's being extended to us. It's not just some service and photocopying and making phone calls and prasad's on time and the tables are cleaned and those kinds of, you know, hospitality, clerical things. It's the exchange of service, of transcendental feeling expressed in this form or that form or the other form. And that's what Krishna consciousness is. It's devotional service, because everyone is serving, and loving relationships are an exchange of Krishna at the center, loving feelings. Someone was asking in a home program very recently, when someone wants to serve me, I feel uncomfortable because I should be serving them. So, what should I do? In that circumstance, and the answer I gave was something like this. Prabhupada taught Krishna consciousness is love and trust, give and take. In a relationship, sometimes you're giving and sometimes you're receiving. And it's not only giving or only receiving. It's sometimes giving, sometimes receiving. So in a relationship with devotees where they're now at least striving to keep Krishna at the center, they want to please Krishna by pleasing those who are dear to Krishna, so they want to serve the devotees. But someone may consider that you're a devotee. Person X is a devotee. So they want to serve. If you go no, 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 then you're blocking that flow of service. But if it goes to you, oh, they want to serve me, then that's a problem too. So if it's service unto those who are, service unto the disciplic succession, service unto those who I'm under the care of, it's just an exchange of loving transaction. So sometimes we're receiving. Someone offers you a gift or offers prasad or discloses their mind in confidence, and sometimes you're offering a gift or offering prasad or disclosing your mind in confidence, as Rupa Goswami teaches, and it's an exchange. So one should learn to graciously receive, not on your own behalf, but on behalf of the principle of loving exchange, with a very genuine, warm thank you, with feelings of gratitude for the gesture of loving extension that's being made. And not just in turn, like, you know, like there's a scorekeeper keeping track of things, but in principle, extending service with feelings. That Guru and Krishna should be pleased by these gestures, and the other person is the very nice recipient. So back to the theme of this evening's presentation. How does loving relationship begin? It begins with receiving with Krishna, receiving Krishna, receiving service or association with Krishna through the medium of another Vaishnava who's carrying Krishna bhakti in their heart. And through that, attraction for Krishna and appreciation for the other person will naturally grow. Krishna is descending into our lives through the medium of the Vaishnavas. So we should want to receive, be eager to receive Krishna. I'll end with this thought. Bhaktivinoda Thakur teaches that one of the ways of going more deeply into chanting of the holy name is to chant with the mood of having Krishna accept you. That is to say, we've broken our relationship with Krishna. Krishna didn't break his relationship with us. We broke our relationship with Krishna. We turned our back on Krishna and walked right into the dark material world and found a place that really wasn't what we hoped for. And again, proved itself to be a big mistake. We know from our spiritual authorities, from our acharyas, that Krishna is forever inviting the fallen conditioned soul to associate once again with him in a loving and serving mood. But unfortunately, we're not paying attention to that. We're too much engaging ourselves in sense gratification and fulfillment of selfish desires. We're ignoring that call of Krishna. So, to go more deeply into chanting, Bhaktivinoda Thakur indicates that we should chant with the mood that Krishna, please again accept me. Try it tomorrow morning. Krishna, please accept me. The translation of the chanting is, please engage me in your service. But it's there's even a, at least I find, a more deep mood of humility involved in this, Krishna, please accept me. And it's very simple expression. And the mood is very powerful. So Krishna, please accept me. This is, your mercy is descending, but my heart is closed. It's another way of saying is, please help me open my heart to the mercy that you're offering. Krishna, please accept me. I left you. I abandoned you. And I've done so many abominable things in that position away from you. I'm very impure, very dirty, very hard of heart. Still, I'm petitioning you, pleading with you, please accept me. Please soften my heart, please open my heart to that mercy that you are made of. When that becomes matured, that eagerness to receive Krishna's mercy has matured, then having a genuine trusting exchange with others who are similarly matured in Krishna consciousness or more advanced in Krishna consciousness, to open our hearts to that association to further nourish our loving relationship with Krishna, it will naturally follow. Prabhupada writes in one of his purports, for one who has a simple and grateful heart, that person can easily enter into the kingdom of God. Such a profound, short statement. For one who has a simple and grateful heart, that person can easily enter into the kingdom of God. So the the gifts that Krishna is extending to all of us in the form of His mercy, in the form of the association of devotees and the holy name and so many things. The deity form of the Lord and the teachings of pure bhakti. We don't have to go chasing after it. It's being very easily and very palatably presented to us. So easy to access. So many wonderful gifts that Krishna is giving just to help us in our journey back to Him. And when feelings of gratitude are there, it's very easy to accept the loving relationships that are being extended to us through the medium of Krishna's devotees. So that's some opening thoughts for our weekend here. See if there's any comments or questions on this topic. Yes?
Maharaj, my question is, how can we request for things in our, I mean, we might be receiving mercy in certain ways in our life, but there are some other areas in our life where we need some caring in certain areas. So I myself often hold back in requesting for help in those areas, thinking that by asking for that help, it might come up as a demand, and then it might sound, you are dreaming about this thing, when you are getting so much time, why are you dreaming about that thing or something? So, how do we know that when we request for help in a certain area, is that a demand or is that something that you are requesting? Because then I don't know whether I am closing my heart when I don't ask for that request or whether I am, I'm basically confused about that particular point.
There's many variables. One of them is the relationship itself. And in the relationship itself, another variable is the kind of openness that has been established within that relationship. For example, the eagerness on your part to serve, as opposed to the eagerness on your part to take. So, but in simple language, the nature of the relationship. If the nature of the relationship is the way that it should be, let's just say, without getting it into examples. If the nature of the relationship is one of service, then the need to have something taken care of will disappear. That is to say, one will feel safe in Krishna's protection without making an appeal for something to be taken care of. One of the verses that I wanted to discuss tomorrow morning is, well, there's several verses where devotees are praying to Krishna, please remove material desire. Because it's the material desire that's the problem, it's not the material, not the situation that isn't configured right so that my desire isn't being fulfilled. That's an advanced stage, and we may not be so advanced. But we should know what the problem isn't something outside, the problem is something inside. and that something inside problem is a material desire, an unfulfilled material desire, or something that's interfering with a desire that I want. Better to pray for the removal of the desire. However, if one is not in a position of spiritual advancement to think like that, then that's defining the relationship where I'm asking Krishna, please fulfill my material desires. And that's where you're feeling uncomfortable. Sounds like. Because in fact, that's what it is. And then the relationship becomes, I'm serving you, you please take care of this. And that's uncomfortable. But that may be our platform. And that, so that may then define the relationship. At least for the time being. It's like Dhruva. Read the story of Dhruva Maharaj very carefully. And that may help you with your understanding. Because it starts with Sakama Bhakti and it ends up with Shuddha Bhakti. The two foremost operative parts of what transformed Dhruva from Sakama to Nishkam or Shuddha Bhakti was his great appreciation for Narada and his very strong purposeful focus upon the personality of Godhead. Driving it was, I want this desire fulfilled. And that will be the standard of my happiness, this material, this desire will be fulfilled. But that material driver became dissolved by these other two components. A deep sense of gratitude to Narada. And his focus upon Krishna or Vishnu. Something else? Yes?
More than often times it happens that you develop some loving relationship with somebody and then there is a breakage and you never know whether it was something on my part or on the other part. And with those kind of experiences, as probably you also mentioned, that then you tend to stay away from those loving relationships. And you tend to get away into developing loving relationships.
That's the, you know, I had a bad experience reason.
Right.
How a Vaishnava thinks about those that you just described is from the position of humility. There's something over here, not something over there. Whether there's something over there or not, there's something over here. That's Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's teaching, and it's a scriptural teaching. Well, you may put it on hold, but I wouldn't recommend you give it up. Go to those who are close to you and are spiritual superiors, and you submit yourself in that relationship and say, "This, you know, not what happened, but what's inside. Help me explore something inside." And here's a way to, you know, prove to yourself it's something inside. If this is what I do, if Srila Prabhupada was in this situation, would the situation have played itself out the same way, or would the situation have become elevated? Answer is very easy. It would have become elevated. So where's the shortfall, the shortcoming? It's over here. So my dear senior Vaishnav, can you help me understand what's inside here? That, because I know there's a bunch of things, but I need some assistance. And then once I identify what that something is, how to remove it. Whatever is going on out there, that's not, I have no control over it. But if there was some purity over here, then I could have some influence. Not control, that's Krishna's department. But some spiritual influence could affect that situation. But it's not happening. So there's something over here. Let me work on purity over here. Instead of, you know, I don't want to have another relationship because that went sour. Yes, Jagatananda.
Could you kindly explain how pride or another manifestation of material humility removes us from the same?
How pride diminishes?
How pride or another manifestation of it, which I understand is material humility, where I.
What's the word?
Material humility.
Material humility. Well, the classic, one of the classics is Durvasa. Before Narada Muni, Durvasa was, Daksha. Daksha was boasting about how religious he was. I've done this yagya, I've done that yagya, this yagya, that. So many yagyas. And you, who obviously don't understand ABC about spirituality, you've deprived my sons of those very, very valuable sacrifices. You know, in the name of religious teaching, he was unable to understand who Narada was and what Narada's teaching was and what Narada had, how he had benefited his sons because of pride. So when one is with pride, Nala Kuvera and Manigriva is another example. Their intoxication was one thing, but they were extremely proud. We're sons of Kuvera. And Kuvera is rich. He's the treasure of heaven. He's not only rich, but he's very confidential devotee of Lord Shiva. And we're his son. So because of that pride, there was no shame. And as they were intoxicated and naked standing before Narada, they didn't even care. They were blocked because of pride. One can't see Krishna or the mercy of Krishna coming into one's life if there's pride in the heart. It's twisted into something completely other than what it is. And a false humility is, I'm not qualified, I can't accept, I'm no good. So just like, you know, putting up a wall and no one can enter. But real humility is that before Krishna I'm very small, and I very much require Krishna's mercy. So there's an eagerness to receive Krishna's mercy. It's my sustenance. I require it. I can't live without it. Yes. I look upon it as a seed that, when nurtured, will grow. So it certainly is a component of bhakti. But someone may not, it's like, you know, Manu. Because, you know, he's small, we can pick on him. His family is a devotee family. He's surrounded by, you know, many things of devotion. So I'm sure there is the quality and character of devotion that's there, but it's being checked. It's not yet, you know, the acknowledgement, at least, you know, expression of acknowledgement of being grateful for that which he's received and is continuing to receive. But when that feeling and that expression starts to come, then that's the sign that the seed of bhakti is now fructifying. So that's to be encouraged. However simple the initial form of that may be. Like Prabhupada, there's a Prabhupada story. When we were in the process, it took a few years to build the Krishna Balaram temple. But from the time the Krishna Balaram deity installation happened, there was one lady that very quietly, every morning, after she took her bath in the river Jamuna, placed a clay pot of Ganges, Jamuna water, by the pujari door. She did it without recognition. She just did it every day. Went to the Jamuna, took her bath, brought a clay pot, placed it by the door, and left. Prabhupada remarked, and then that suddenly, after some time, it stopped. And I guess she had some illness; she couldn't continue. So that then they brought it to Prabhupada's attention. This lady is doing the service. Now she's some illness. She can't do it. Prabhupada said, for that service, she'll go back to Godhead. Because it was just a genuine expression of service to Radhasham Sundar. Very simple. So, to encourage that is something that's just important for the devotees who want to open their heart but maybe find that it's blocked to do so. Little simple expressions of feelings of gratitude and expressions of gratitude. And exercise that. Gratitude muscle. And watch it grow. Becomes bhakti. But that's an important beginning. And stay on that platform. Yes, Anna Kelly.
I have a question regarding this receiving. we hear in the Nectar of Instruction that when we perform devotional service that we're supposed to be enthusiastic, patient, and confident. And I assume that holds in relationships.
Sure.
Also.
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, how does one balance being patient with requesting some reciprocation? Because like you mentioned, you can't give if you don't receive something, you can't give it.
Yes.
So how would one give in a loving relationship if they're not, at least they're not feeling like they're receiving it? Like in deity worship, for example, if one's always just patiently doing the deity worship with the intellectual understanding that this is not just a statue, but you don't really feel that it's a person in front of you like you would if you're dressing your own child, you know, because they reciprocate. So how does one practice patience and confidence on one hand, but on the other hand, you feel like you have to ask for the result, even though you don't deserve it yet, just so you can...
Well, it's not asking for... If the asking is acceptance, I like that one, from that mood in particular. You're not asking for result in the form of, you know, the experience, and I'll know I have the experience because I know what I'm expecting. But just to be accepted in that relationship of service once again. Whatever Krishna wants to do. And that there's patience, certainly. The request is the relationship. And it sounds like I want something, but actually the flip side is my heart is blocked and therefore I'm not receiving that which I know you want to give. So I'm saying in the form of please accept me, but the actual message is please help me open my heart, which is very hard and closed. You're eager and I'm not. I wish to become more eager, you could say it that way, to receive that which you are wanting to give me. Please accept me. Please help me open my heart to receive in this and act in this relationship. That for me it answers your question. I don't know if for you it answers your question. Yes, last question because it's time for the deity greeting. Yeah. Just to the second one, gratitude need not be, oh, it's for me. Rather, gratitude is just see the benevolence of this person. Although lack of qualification is all that you'll find in me, still this person is so kind. That kind of gratitude. Not, oh, look at this. Now I got, you know, I got one of these. And now I got, you know, not proprietary or selfish. It's recognizing the kindness and honoring that and feeling it. And the first one was, say it again.
Any service I render.
It's for purification. Well, it's just, similarly, It's services for the other person. That's what service is. What you gain is purification, but it's for the other person. Ultimately, you know, the Krishna will be pleased by that service. That's the purpose. There's the master, and there's the servant. And the beneficiary is the master. And the servant just enjoys serving the master. And Krishna is the master. So Krishna should be pleased. And that's what our life is. That's what a soul does, is serves. And the purification is byproduct. Instead of serving illusion, serving Krishna. That's purification. But I'm reluctant to serve Krishna because I have this selfishness thing going on. But let me forego that. Let me just serve Krishna. And so the byproduct is purification. You can say it's for purification. That's not wrong to say. But the higher is